Welcome back, Hemingway listeners, to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Swim said the mama fishy answered some questions that I asked you, which I forgot to say just now. Part 6, Chapter 3, the questions that I asked you were these. They will, they won't. Not really much of a question. Actually, neither of these are questions. They're more just prompts, discussion prompts. They will, they won't. That was the kind of motif of the chapter, the recurring theme. Levin puts his foot in his mouth a bit. Swim, said the mama fishy, said, interesting that Levin does a variation on the daisy petal picking game. I and my friends played it as girls. Yeah, me and my friends played it as girls too. The game is of allegedly French origin, in which one person seeks to determine whether the object of their affection returns that affection. A person playing the game alternatively speaks the phrase, he loves me, he loves me not. Yeah, that's what we played as well. She loves me, she loves me not. While picking one petal off a flower, usually an oxeye daisy, for each phrase. The phrase they speak on picking off the last petal supposedly represents the truth between the object of their affection loving them or not. I am Norwegian, said that game has been popular forever in Norway too, with the same flower, though we call it priest's collar. Interesting thing about that game is you can just determine the outcome by counting the petals. It's not real magic. I am Norwegian, said Anda Afge... Oh, that's me. Anda Afgevnia is Afgen... Af... What's... How do you say this name? Afgevnia. Afgevnia is Levin's servant, but I think she more serves as a mother figure to him now. This chapter makes it clear that Kitty and Levin make up the healthiest couple in the book so far. They just genuinely love each other. And love loving each other. They are loving each other, and they love loving each other. Aguanadl said, I enjoyed the comment Levin made about not getting any work done anymore. My partner and I often joke about this too. We are both workaholics when we're single. It is great to have each other, but couple time sure does eat into productivity. Yeah, I've noticed that in my past too, that it's really nice to be comfortable with someone and just feel all cozy and relaxed, but you then do end up just like lying around a lot, watching a lot of TV and movies. Like when I find myself, you know, dating someone, it's always like, what movie do you want to watch? And sometimes it's me asking that, but quite often it's them. And it's like, do we have to watch a movie like every night of the week? In single life, I might watch one movie a week, and mostly maybe like one TV show a day. I'd say I probably watch about one TV show a day if you averaged it out. It's quite a few days where I don't watch any TV, and then there might be a day here and there where I'll watch two or three episodes of something. But yeah, if you average it out. But I'm not going to sit there for, you know, 2.5 hours every night watching telly. That is madness. I've got video games to play and YouTube videos to watch, which is, you know, what am I talking about? It's all just staring at a screen. But still, I think my attention span has been completely demolished by YouTube and video games, which is not good because I'm supposed to be writing novels with my life. Komodo Spaceship 7. Komodo Spaceship 7. New user? Have I read that name before? I'm sorry if I have. I'm just having a look at Komodo Spaceship 7's history. Oh, they're a brand new account 13 days ago. And they've jumped straight in to talk to us. And their comment reads, why are her hands so disgusting? Why are her hands so disgusting? Whose hands? Was someone's hands disgusting? It's really weird to have a Redditor. That's literally the first comment they've ever made on Reddit. Is on our subreddit. Saying that someone's got disgusting hands. Welcome, Komodo Spaceship 7. Jump on board. Nice to have you here. Drum roll. it's time to keep reading. Sorry, my brain's frazzled. We've had 2 days in a row, today and yesterday, which were both been over 40 degrees, with just no rest from it, no cool change at night or anything like that. So I think my brains might have boiled inside of my brain, and I'm currently insane. Part six, chapter four of part six goes like this. Varenka, with the white kerchief over her black hair, surrounded by the children and good-naturedly and cheerfully busy with them, and evidently excited by the possibility of an offer of marriage from a man she liked, looked very attractive. Oh my God, what a... All right, I'm just going to pause for a second and just dissect this chapter, because the last chapter was the same. This one seems like it's going to be another one where I don't know if the translator just had an off day or if Tolstoy had an off day, but these sentences are laughably poorly constructed. Like, Varenka is the first word of the sentence. And looked very attractive is the point of the sentence. Varenka looked very attractive. But they've put like a comma after the word Varenka, or not a comma, but they've separated it with the word with, and had a little aside, which is fine. You could say like Varenka plucking a flower looked very attractive. That's fine. But if your aside goes in too twisty-turny of a direction, then it becomes, as soon as it becomes clear that like the point of the sentence isn't the closing statement, then the sentence becomes poor. It's poorly constructed, basically. So you don't want to fit as much as you can into one sentence and have all these, like, it's an aside within an aside within an aside within an aside and then back to the point of the sentence. There's no one that would think that's a well-constructed sentence. Like, I like that he makes complex sentences, don't get me wrong. I actually really like his long, winding sentences, but this one just strays away from the point and then back. Let me read it again. Let me start again. Varenka, with her white kerchief over her black hair, surrounded by the children and good-naturedly and cheerfully busy with them, and evidently excited by the possibility and offer of marriage from a man she liked, looked very attractive. That's a bad sentence. Anyway, let's continue. Koznishev walked by her side and did not cease admiring her. Looking at her, he remembered all the charming things he had heard her say, and all he knew of her that was good. Yeah, see, look, there's these chapters of these books. It was the same in War and Peace, which was also Maud, translated by Maud. We've just got chapters with clunky sentences, where as you say them, you start going like this and putting them together. Let me read that one again. Koznishev walked by her side and did not cease admiring her. Looking at her, he remembered all the charming things he had heard her say, and all he knew of her that was good. And he grew more and more conscious that what he felt for her was something rare, something he had felt but once before, a long, long time ago, when he was very young. His sense of pleasure at her nearness went on increasing until it reached a point where, when placing in her basket an enormous wood mushroom with a thin stem and an upcurling top, he looked into her eyes and, noting the flush of joy and frightened agitation that suffused her face, he himself became embarrassed and gave her a smile that said too much. Is this for real? Like, how does it just go? How does the quality just dive from to like a 20%? Oh, goddammit. Okay. If it is so, I must think it over and come to a decision and not let myself be carried away like a boy by the impulse of the moment, he told himself. Now I will go and gather mushrooms quite on my own account, or else harvest will not be noticeable, said he. Who's talking? Who talks like that in this book? No one in this book talks that way. Now I will go and gather mushrooms quite on my own account, or else my harvest will not be noticeable, he said, and went away from the skirts of the wood, where they were walking about on the short, silky grass under sparsely growing old birches, and penetrated deeper into the wood, where among the white birch trunks grew grey-stemmed aspens and dark hazel bushes. When he had gone some 40 paces, he stepped behind a spindle bush with pink and red earring-shaped blossoms, and paused, knowing that he could no longer be seen. Around him everything was quiet, only the hum of flies, like that of a swarm of bees, sounded continually high up in the birch trees beneath which he stood, and occasionally the children's voices reached him. I just realised what's happening. I just realised why this chapter's so clunky. Tolstoy does this thing. Whenever something significant happens in one of his books, he stuffs that chapter full of nature. Whenever there's a huge emotional moment for a character, or a huge turning point for a character, it'll be stuffed full of bits of nature. And the language will become a little bit more syrupy, a little bit contrived. Like, he's really trying to be like, this is the pivotal chapter. And being a proposal chapter, I'm guessing we're about to see a proposal, he's going for that. Poorly, but he's going for it. Let's continue. Around him everything was quiet, only the hum of flies, like that of a swarm of bees, sounded continually high up in the birch trees beneath which he stood, and occasionally the children's voices reached him. Suddenly from the skirts of the wood not far off he heard Varenka's contralto voice calling to Grisha, and a smile of pleasure lit up his face. Conscious of that smile, Koznishev shook his head disapprovingly at his own state, and taking out a cigar began to light it. He was long unable to strike a match against the bark of a birch. The delicate white outer bark adhered to the phosphorus, and the light went out. At last, one match did burn up, and the scented smoke of the cigar, like a broad swaying sheet, definitely outlined, moved forwards and upwards over the bush, under the overhanging branches of the birch tree. Watching the sheet of smoke, he went on slowly, meditating on his condition of mind. Why not, he thought. If it were just a sudden impulse or passion, if I only felt this attraction, this mutual attraction, it is mutual, but felt that it was contrary to the whole tenor of my life, and that by giving way to it I should be false to my vocation and duty, but is nothing of the kind. The one thing I can find against it is that when I lost Marie, I told myself that I would remain true to her memory. That is the only thing I can say against my feeling. That is important, thought Koznishev. Conscious, nevertheless, that this consideration could not have any importance for him personally, although in the eyes of others it might spoil his poetic role. But apart from that, however much I searched, I could find nothing to say against my feeling. If I had chosen by reason alone, I could find nothing better. He recalled the women and girls he had known, but try as he would, he could not recall one who united in herself to such a degree all, literally all, the qualities which he, thinking the matter over in cold blood, would desire in a wife. She had all the charm and freshness of youth, but was no longer a child, and if she loved him consciously, as a woman ought to love. That was one favourable consideration. The second one was, she was not only far from worldly, but evidently felt a repulsion from the world. Yet she knew the world, and had all the ways of a woman of good society, without which a life companion would be unthinkable for him. The third was, she was religious, not irresponsibly religious, and kind-hearted like a child. Like Kitty, for instance. But her life was based on religious convictions. Even down to small details, Koznishev found in her all that he desired in a wife. She was poor and solitary, so that she would not bring into her husband's house a crowd of relations and their influence, as he saw Kitty doing. He would be indebted to her husband for everything. She would be indebted to her husband for everything, which was a thing he had always desired in his future family life. And this girl, uniting all these qualities, loved him. He was modest, but could not help being aware of this, and he loved her. One of the opposite arguments was his age. But he came of a long-lived race. He had not a single grey hair, not No one thought he was 40, and he remembered that Varenka had said it was only in Russia that men of 50 considered themselves old, and that in France a man of 50 considered himself dans les forces les larges de la guerre, in the prime of his life, while on the 40 was un jeune homme, a young man. And what was the use of counting by years when he felt as young at heart as he had been 20 years ago? Was it not youth that he was experiencing now, when coming out again on the other side of the wood he saw in the bright slanting sunbeams the graceful form of Varenka in her yellow dress and with a basket on her arm, stepping lightly past the trunk of an old birch, and when the impression of Varenka merged into one with the view that had struck him with its beauty, the view of the field of ripening oaks, bathed in the slanting sunbeams, and the old forest beyond, flecked with yellow, fading away into the bluish distance. His heart leapt with joy. His feelings carried him away. He felt that the matter was decided. Varenka, who had bent to pick a mushroom, rose buoyantly and glanced around. Throwing away his cigar, Kozintsev went toward her with resolute steps.
Oh!
It's happening. It is gonna happen. He's moving towards her with resolute steps. This is exciting. This is exciting. Worth the me bitching about the chapter. I tend to bitch sometimes, especially when it's really hot. Especially when it's really hot. Yesterday, I was in the kitchen at work in the restaurant, and oh my god, the chef, who's a very good friend of mine, and the dishwasher, who is my very good friend also, and they are, those two happen to be engaged. So the chef, well, she's a chef, you know, they fling around harsh words as part of being a chef. Why isn't this done? Come on, who did this? Who did blah, blah, blah. Him being the fiance, in there just to help out with some dishes on a busy day, doesn't like getting accused of doing bits and pieces that he didn't do. Anyway, They get into a big kitchen argument. It's 45 degrees in this kitchen. Everyone's too hot. I go out, grab some plates from some tables. I'm sweating like a pig. Come back in. They're still arguing. I dump the dishes. Try to, like, you know, do a bit of a peace thing. But then I'm just like, oh, I might just back out of this situation. I go out, get some more plates. Come back in. They're still arguing. We have outdoor dining, by the way, and an indoor kitchen in the cellar door. So I'm hot. I'm going out into the sunshine. I'm coming back into the steaming kitchen. There's no escape from it. 2, 3, 4 trips out and back. They're still arguing. And I can see they're both red in the face. They're arguing over something that happened in the kitchen. it must have been going on for 20 minutes by this point. And this is where I stepped in with, I think, a very professional, very wise and mature move. I did the tactical cold Coca-Cola. I go, hey guys, I just kind of butted in, do you guys want a cold drink? I'm gonna grab a Coke. I'll grab each one. And they go, oh yeah. And I think it was then that they realized just how hot and bothered they were, and I went to the cool room, grabbed a couple of cans of Coke, brought them back, one for each of them. There you go. And they just stopped arguing and had some nice cool drinks. And I just went, that is a pro move by me. That's conflict resolution at its best. These two people are hot, they're pissed off, and they're having a go at each other. But I think most of the reason they were fighting was because they were hot. I nailed it. Anyway, I just wanted to boast about that. There was some reason I told that story just then. Was there? I don't know. I must have linked to that story from somewhere. I can't remember what I was talking about, though. But we got there. Anyway, I told that story for some reason. Yeah, cool. Thanks for listening. If you still got to this far through the podcast, you're the best person ever. I really do. Thank you. And I'll see you tomorrow.